Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
No other radio team in Boston has logged in this many locker room hours. Loomer Loney.
I ain't here for a long time. I'm here for a good time.
Christian Fourier.
Spank me.
Glenn Ordway.
I don't know whether he wants it on the right ass cheek or the left, but he wants it someplace.
So mask up.
I'm not here to play games.
Put your blindfold on.
Woo!
And your earplugs in.
Oh, hogs. Hogs are available.
It's time for...
the sausage smell.
Glenn. Stop.
OMF on WEEI.
Excuse me, Mr. Kraft. I have to take a pee.
Bring it back.
All right, back here on OMF. We are monitoring the Patriots press room down there. Still no Cam Newton. Scheduled
it's just
again.
Like Tom. What's the difference? It's like the quarterback has changed, but we're still dealing with the same issues.
Well, yeah, you got a lot of rehab on that hamstring.
Apparently. So here's what we'll do. We're going to get into the Celtics and talk a little bit about what happened last night. And then we'll keep our eyes and ears open. And then once Cam shows up at the podium, we'll switch down there and at least pick up some of Cam Newton. See if he has anything interesting to say. Interesting.
He's a great listener.
Interesting last night. It was a terrific basketball game, especially for game one of a seven-game series. But, God, it was so freaking irritating. one of the greatest block shot I've ever seen in post-season history with the NBA. But more frustrating, you get an unbelievable game out of Marcus Smart, 26 points. You're going to look back and say, how the hell did we not take game one?
So what's the problem then? So you tell me, you go first this time.
Kemba's the problem. He's a big part of the problem. If he doesn't become part of your offense, he doesn't become productive because he's not real good at the defensive end. He's hurting you there. If he can't give you production at the offensive end, he handles the ball far too much, then you can't win the series. I don't think they can win unless Kemba is at least good. Right now, he sucks. He's awful. Horrendous. Under 15% from three-point territory. And this is nothing new, guys. This is not just happening now. This has happened throughout the playoffs. He's been awful. And I don't know. You think he has the yips? I think teams are focused.
Because he's not awful.
I think things... No, he's a terrific scorer. I think teams are focusing in on him. We talk about the box and one and what Nick Nurse did. Well, you saw what they did to him last night. They were exploiting him. Switches, bigger people on him, trapping him over the timeline. And he's handling the ball too long. Give the ball up. Go without the ball. Let somebody else get doubled, and you're the free guy.
See, I think it's. I'll go next, Lou. Actually, you go first because I'm going to tie off of what I know you're going to say.
Yeah. See, I don't. I remember looking at Jason Tatum and saying he's not ready yet, right, to be top 10, and I still don't. But this was more of Brad Stevens isn't ready. This game was so infuriating to watch a basketball team sit there for three quarters and play great, have a 14-point lead in the fourth quarter, see that go down to six, eight, whatever, get it right back to eight with 5 minutes to go, and then all of a sudden, Brad Stevens, I mean, what's up with the isolation basketball? The last four or five possessions, it was ridiculous. The last 2 minutes and 53 in regulation, Kemba Walker and Jason Tatum were the only two to touch the basketball, except for a Jaylen Brown rebound where he kicked it back out to Tatum. It was like they come down, and this is the offense you're going to run? And so I put that on the coach. Like, all of a sudden, out of nowhere, not moving the ball, not getting the open shot, going to isolation with 4 minutes to go in a game. That was your offense? And then what happened? You got to overtime, and you ran your offense again at the beginning of it. I have no idea you know, Brad Stevens, we talk about him all the time. I like the guy. I know the Green Teamers love the guy. I like him. But I'm still waiting for him. And I think in this game here to change everything and to go to some offense that nobody recognizes or everybody hates, and he admits that he hates it when they just pound the basketball, I put this game on Brad Stevens. This was all his fault late in that game with the offense he called.
Yeah, I think there's a trend here, and I think you should be nervous about this because their ability to close isn't there.
That's awful.
They couldn't close, and the games they lost, they had opportunities to close. They couldn't. Toronto did. In the first game against the Heat, you had multiple opportunities to close. You couldn't. They did. Jimmy Butler personally closed those games, had two huge shots, a three-pointer, and then the shot when he attacked the rim, he got the and one. You had the opportunity to close, and you couldn't do it. So I think there's a big picture here because I think both teams are tough. I think both teams are gritty. I like both coaches. But when it really matters in those critical situations, you end up making the wrong decision. I think that's partly because of the coach not having awareness of what is going on, giving some of his players the benefit of the doubt when he shouldn't. I think that the shot by Tatum at the end of regulation, the game is tied up. You don't need a three-pointer. You take a three-pointer that's 3 feet behind the arc. I just felt like that the probability of that shot wasn't good. You could have done yourself some favors by trying to create more, trying to attack the rim. Maybe somebody else gets more open because you're penetrating and they have a wide open shot. I just felt like their ability to close doesn't exist. There's something missing with them, and they haven't done it yet.
No, I think it's a great point. And I think when you talk about closing, it's not necessarily the last 3 minutes, because Lou's right. The last 3 minutes, it was ISO ball.
Painful.
Yeah, but it was ISO ball at times when they took leads. Early in the first quarter, they took a 12-point lead. Then they kind of slow it down.
I thought Brad hated hero ball.
Yeah,
I thought he hated it. I thought it was like
good point, Lou.
Because it
exactly
looked
what
to
it
me
like
everyone wanted that dagger. You know what I mean? They wanted, you know, and I don't even mind Tatum in that final shot. I want him to have that basketball. But it looked like everyone was trying to deliver one-on-one daggers, you know, be the guy and have that celebration going to break. And you know what I mean? Just like, I was like, I hate that part of this game. And I think you saw that the whole time. If he hates hero ball, why would he constantly let his team go out there and play it?
Makes no sense. You know what? I'm glad you brought that up because that's what it felt like. Like nobody else is touching the ball. It's only two guys touching the ball at the end of that game.
Well, that's 2.5 to 3
so
minutes.
So I'm sitting there going, okay, are we really? So wait, so nobody trusts Jaylen Brown. Okay, really?
Furious.
So nobody trusts Marcus Smart. I get it. Like
Marcus
I'd be a little bit nervous about that at the end of the game. But either way, the guy's been making big plays. I'd give him the benefit of the doubt. So the only person who can close for you is Jason Tatum or Kemba Walker? This needs to change. This will be a 7-game series, and it will always come down, in my opinion, to a 1-possession game because neither team has any quit in them.
And here's the problem. You don't feel good about your team if it comes down to one possession.
I don't.
I do with them. Right.
Because you could say, hey, Jimmy Butler didn't have a great game. You know what? He did when it mattered.
Yep. Yeah. I will say this, and your whole idea of you know, how gritty they are and how tough they are, and I think it's much different in the bubble. I think if you ever talked about the possibility of, let's say, Miami and Denver being in the NBA Finals before all of this crap began, you'd sit there and laugh at it because the NBA doesn't work that way. It's home court advantage. It's the best teams are always there at the end. This is totally different. It is totally different. It would not surprise me at all if it were Denver and Miami in this thing in the end. And it makes no sense, but you're in the bubble, and you need self-motivators. You need guys that are going to go out there and be able to pump themselves up because you're not getting the crowd doing it. You're not playing the first two games at home where you're getting the crowd behind you, okay? Celtics would have been playing that game at the Garden last night. I think they would have won it at the Garden. I do. I think you're playing on an even playing field now when you take the crowd out of it and they're all playing on a foreign independent court.
Yeah, I feel like you get the truest indication of what a team is like, how they're built, because you can sit there and look at the Clippers and how they completely just choked that away.
Three games in a row they choked.
Yeah, so they weren't thriving. They allowed the Denver Nuggets to come back in.
With more heart, more grit.
Exactly.
And motivated.
So,
right.
So it makes me nervous that I feel like, I think for the most part, I think they're even. I think they each team's got a bunch of talent. Each team, I guess, has good coaching. Take the fans out of it. But when it matters, who's got that gene in them? Who's got that ability
to
make the right decision? They all have the ability to make the shot, Lou, but when it matters most and there is no alternative, who can make the shot?
Well, I mean, if the offense down the stretch in close games is just going to be one-on-one, like what during the timeouts, what's the discussion? During the TV timeouts, what's the discussion? What's the play? You know, the play is, okay, you three guys go down there and sit in the corner. And we're going to go two-man basketball, eventually just isolation 101. Like again, I have no idea why you would sit there and tell Jaylen Brown and Marcus Smart that you can't play, you know, with 3 minutes to go in regulation and even in overtime. Like, this is the Kemba Tatum show, and it'd be different if Kemba was playing a good game. The guy couldn't make a shot. Now, he made a couple big shots, but he was also bailed out throughout the night an awful lot. He drove that thing into traffic, and balls were all over the place. He got bailed out a couple times. His teammates came up with the ball, or they would blow fouls. But a few times, you're like, what? I don't understand. You know, you play a great basketball game. I thought it was an amazing game. It really, really was a fun game to watch that became so frustrating because they stopped playing the way they were. They just stopped. They turn into something you didn't even recognize.
So do they get to the point where they start feeling really good about themselves? Oh, we're much better. Because I think they're a more talented team. And I'm not taking anything away from Miami, but I think Boston is more talented. Maybe not as deep, but they're more talented at the top rung. And they took an early lead in the game. And then suddenly you sat there and said, well, what happened?
But are they,
well, they were moving the ball. Everything was going well. And late in the game, they took a 14-point lead early in the fourth quarter, yeah, which, by the way, and you said it earlier, is nothing in the NBA today.
Well,
a few threes changed that around. But where do they change the way they play?
Well, the first 14-whatever double-digit lead means nothing to me. You know, when you're 6 minutes into the game and you're up 10, like, really? Like, you really think that, oh, I can't believe they didn't hold that lead for the next, you know, three quarters? No, but when you got that kind of lead in the fourth quarter, that's different.
Well, I agree in the outcome of the game, Lou, but if you're taking a lead early on and you suddenly stop playing your game, that's what they did. That's the point I'm making. It wasn't going to change the outcome of the game, but you stop playing your game. And so Miami gets right back into it. And, Mom, didn't you see the change in the speed of Miami? You're sitting there going, what the hell just happened?
That was impressive.
But again,
you
had Marcus Smart makes a huge dead ball foul. He gives you the opportunity to tie it up. Jason Tatum makes it. You have Jaylen Brown with a huge offensive tip-in to keep you in the game. You have Kemba Walker, who made a timely step-back two-pointer to keep you in the game. And then when it's all said and done and you have an opportunity to win it, you can't do it. So you can – and I will say, just to your point about talent, do you really think that the Celtics – or have more talent than the Heat? When you take their top three players and you take the Celtics' top three players, who would you bet on?
Celtics.
They have
better top.
I don't know.
Who's the
really?
Third? Okay, so you got Bam, you got Butler. Who's the third best player?
I'll take Dragic. I'll take Duncan.
No.
What do you mean? So Kemba Walker, you pull up his stats in the postseason.
No. Here's
he
what
sucks.
I agree. Here's
so
the problem.
Who's got really better talent? Hold
on. Kemba should be destroying.
Should
Dragic in this series?
He's been exposed. Would you say?
Yes. And that's
a problem.
And that's what concerns it. It goes back to what Lou's saying. So what the hell is Brad playing him 43 minutes last night? Are you watching the game, Brad? He's getting destroyed out there. Dragic is embarrassing him. And then he played him 54 in the overtime game. He's not bringing it to you, and he's getting exploited at the other end. They right now are picking him out. As Kendrick Perkins said on TV last night, they're picking on him.
Yeah.
They know that he's the weak link.
Yeah, and this isn't a one-game performance.
It's been the whole playoffs.
His last five games, he is 5-for-34. He is shooting 14.7% from three.
That's not good.
14.7%, and one of the most aggravating possessions was after he hit one of these floaters with about a minute to go to put him up five. They came right down the court within seconds. And at the top of the key, the kid Tyler Hero's got the ball, and he just takes two steps and walks away from him. And lets the kid drain a three. And now it's a two-point game with a minute to go. And you think, a minute to go. You know, you just felt good about yourself because you finally hit a freaking shot. And you think, one more defensive stop. Up five with a minute to go. One more. You get the ball back with 45 seconds, whatever. One defensive stop, maybe you're up five still and they start fouling. Or whatever, right? And that's the intensity you bring in a defensive end of the court? You walk away from a three-point shooter, let him cut it to two?
I tell you what, when you hear this, it's going to make it even worse because the NBA has put out their two-minute report where they go back and they look at the plays.
The foul on Bam?
Celtics were gifted two incorrect calls in crunch time.
Oh, let me guess which one was.
The smart off-the-ball yep. offensive charge he took on Jones that gave Tatum the free throw to tie it up at the end of regulation was incorrect, according to the NBA. The Dragic on Kemba trip call late in overtime was also incorrect. Also, Tatum should have been called for a traveling violation off the catch and spin before taking the final shot of regulation wow. over Jones. So they got three freaking gifts.
Yeah.
Well, then, then the basketball gods were listening and watching.
Never
and
should
saying,
have got to that point.
You never should have won. No.
But if you're Brad Stevens, you guys tell me, what do you do if Kemba Walker comes out and looks like the Kemba that we have seen so far in all the playoffs? Everybody loves him. The chemistry is much better with Kemba. We get all of that. He's killing you right now. What do you do if you're the coach, Luke?
Well, I think you have to start looking at Wanamaker. And it's hard for me to say more because he did play almost 25 minutes.
And he played well.
Right? So, and what do you do with Kemba? Listen, you're not shooting well. You don't shoot anymore. That's just not Brad Stevens' style. Unfortunately, you know, limiting minutes might be the answer. It may, maybe it's not, you know, Kemba, what, 43 minutes, Wanamaker 25. I don't know. Do you shave a couple more minutes off there because at least Wanamaker can give you some defense? Unfortunately, you got to ride the guy out. That's what you yep. have to do. You have to ride the guy out and see what he looks like.
All right, hold it there.
You do.
We're gonna go down to Foxborough. Cam Newton has just stepped up to the podium. So here's Cam Newton.
The ball, but I seen he put up some big numbers and, you know, just always rooting for a guy like himself and with his athleticism and his, you know, it's just great for the game.
Next question, Chris Ryan, followed by Joe Chiara.
Yeah, Cam, just curious as to what you're seeing from the Seattle defense right now and how you feel that week one went in terms of integrating your playing style with what the Patriots' approach is?
We're just trying to keep building. Take as much as possible that the defense is going to give us. And like I said, we're just trying to keep evolving as an offense.
Next question, Joe Chiara, followed by Ian Steele.
Hey, Cam, how are you?
Sensational.
It's good. I like to hear that. Just your overall assessment of week one and then the expectations going into this week and usually a tough environment, but with no fans there, what are the expectations heading into week two after what you guys were able to accomplish last week?
As a team, we're just trying to keep getting better. It's no magic word, no magic plays, no magic, you know, whatever a person may think that's going to get us over this hump. You know, we know we're going in and play a tough team, tough defense, me specifically. And it's going to take all three phases to play great, you know, football together. So for us, it's not nothing that we haven't been preparing for up to this point, even though it's Wednesday. But by the time Sunday night comes, we all would be, you know, have that eye on, you know, trying to, you know, play Patriot football.
Thank you.
Next question, Ian Steele, followed by Mark Daniels.
Thanks, Stacey. Cam, thanks for the time. Coach Belichick lost his mom this week. I'm wondering if you've spoken to him and how he's doing and just your reaction to that news.
Yeah, and, you know, anybody who's lost somebody that dear to them, you know, you would empathize with them. We found out as a team, and, you know, obviously my condolences not only goes to, you know, Coach Bill, but also, you know, every Belichick that's on the staff. So they've handled it great. And, you know, if something like that happens, everybody's different, but, you know, I don't think it has been a distraction. You know, you will want the mourning process. You know it's going to happen, but only thing you can do is just, you know, show your empathy and your support.
Thanks, Ken.
Next question, Mark Daniels, followed by Dan Roach.
Hey, Ken. Ken, we talked to you about being a leader a few weeks ago when the team named you captain. And I just want to ask you, how would you sort of sum up what being a leader means to you and what you've learned about leadership just, you know, throughout years in the NFL and even going back to college?
Well, you know, it's just holding yourself accountable. And that's what I try to do, you know, whether it's via words or via actions. You know, I have to make sure that I'm not being selfish and not thinking about the team and knowing that I am putting the team first in a lot of things that I do. So, like I said, whether it's by leading by example or by just giving a pep talk,
they need
we all can lead. But in order to be a great leader, you have to also be a great follower. And there's a lot of guys on this team that I follow and see from afar and just get the little nuggets of how they prepare and just work on a day-to-day basis. And, you know, that's just, I'm trying to, you know, put in my repertoire of living each and every day.
Thank you.
next question, Dan Roach, followed by Megan O'Brien.
Again?
Hi, Cam. Just a thought on your excitement level for your first road game as a member of the New England Patriots, but also how aware you are and as a team. Obviously, they've done a good job here at Foxborough and Gillette Stadium of safety protocols for COVID.
Traders on the hotel
just
rooms.
About being on the road for the first time as a team and being a leader and making sure everybody, you know, does the right thing when it comes to safety as well.
Yeah, it's been excuse me.
Whoa, bless you.
After COVID.
You know, this is an exciting
take his temperature
kind of trip. We've been barricaded for at least a month and a half with the normalcy of it's kind of felt like Groundhog's Day, doing everything the same each and every day, getting tested. And just for me, I've been trying to learn so much as possible in a short span. And it's no different than anybody else, but, you know, to kind of get out and about is one thing, but it's still a work trip. So, you know, even though we have been, you know, allotted to leave, you know, for working purposes, I think the NFL as well as the Patriots have done such a great job with protecting us as individuals and, you know, just keeping us informed about the test results and how we can always you know, stay safe and just giving us the necessary antidotes, you know, from hand sanitizer to, you know, washing soap to everything else going over and beyond to helping us to not only protect ourselves, but, you know, obviously people with families protecting our families as well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next question, Megan O'Brien, followed by Andrew Callahan.
Cam, last week when we spoke with N'Keal Harry, he described your relationship like you were his big brother. After something happens like last week with N'Keal and the fumble, as one of the leaders on this team and someone who he feels like is a big brother, what can you say to him to sort of lift him up and transition into Seattle?
I think, you know, I spoke with N'Keal, and let's just put a lot of things into perspective here. Right. Did he have a good game? Yes, he did. I think that one play overshadowed the production that he did have. He bailed me out on a play on a kind of inaccurate pass that he came down with and got the first down. He did pretty good in the run game. You know, he had a couple contested catches. And you know, all that was kind of for naught because a lot of people just focused on the fumble. And granted, I'd be the first person to tell you he knows, or he will be the first person to tell you that he knows that's unacceptable. But obviously, when you just put things into perspective and you call a apple an apple and a spade, it was just one mistake. You know, him still being a young player, trying to come into his own. Things like that will happen. You just will want him to be minimized as much as possible. But, you know, he's making leaps and strides, you know, as everyone would expect him to be. He's growing up into his best self. And for him, you know, after chatting with him, he knows he has to, you know, bring or make practice game like, and that's the only thing that you can imagine. I the thing that makes me and Nikhil even more, you know, kind of closer is I told Nikhil my spiel. Obviously, being in Carolina, but I've had a Nikhil, you know, in my life for as long as my career has existed. You know, being a high invested draft pick, you know, dating back to Kelvin Benjamin, to Devin Funches, those young guys. Me also being young at the time too. Then you invest in Curtis Samuel, DJ Moore, Christian McCaffrey. So it's nothing new to come on a team and you have a young talent at receiver and trying to morph him into the best player that he could possibly be. And I know Nikhil's buying in not only to my theory and methods, but also to the team as well. And, you know, plays like that are going to happen. And we just hope that that's the only time it will happen.
Thank you.
Next question, Andrew Callahan. Last question will be Mike Giardi. Go ahead, Andrew.
Thank you, Amba. Appreciate the time. We talked with Pete Carroll earlier today, and he was recalling some of the games you guys have had before, obviously, you know, in a different system down in Carolina, and he called them tough. What do you think of when you think about your previous battles with the Seahawks?
I don't think people understand, you know, we played Seattle in Carolina like they were a division game. We played them a lot, and if this is not an accurate stat, but I will kind of put my name on it. I think we played Seattle more than we played any other team outside of than our division. You know, it was a team that we kind of looked forward to playing, measuring our toughness and where our team was. And, you know, this week is not going to be any different. It's simple. They know who they are. They know what they want to do. And they're not going to conform or change for nobody. And, you know, when you got a method or mentality like that, it's kind of hard to lose. When you got a quarterback that's under siege there or at the realm, it's kind of hard to, you know, lose. And he has so much command of that team and offense. And obviously with the new acquisition of the guys that they do have there, from the cornerbacks to the free safeties to the linebackers to the D-line, it makes no difference. I mean, we can go back 5-10 years from now and still kind of go about how the Seattle Seahawks have been a great team to contend for championships year in and year out, and this year is no different.
Last question, Mike Giardi.
Hey, Cam, hope you're having a good day. Just wanted to ask you how you felt like you handled the checks at the line of scrimmage, and if you felt as comfortable as you wanted to, at least for week one in that offense.
Yeah, it's still a learning process. And, you know, from leaving here to go, try to master it as much as possible. You know, leading up until Sunday, you know, it makes no difference. You know, for me, I just have to always, you know, have that conscience to keep getting better. And, you know, this is a 20-year in the making offense, and, you know, not just a coach that just came here or, you know, somebody who just came here. They've been building for years now, and it's up to me to, you know, kind of catch up as much as possible each and every day. And Josh has helped me so much. The quarterbacks have helped me so much. You know, Jed has helped me so much about this whole process. And, you know, it's just up to me to just keep learning.
Thanks, Cam.
All right, there you go. Cam Newton from Foxborough. It's very interesting that they're doing all of this on Zoom calls, and yet the media really is trying to see if they can really be nice to Cam. Hey, Cam, how
are
you
today? Be his best friend.
Be your best friend.
Hey, Cam, how are you?
How you doing, Cam? How are you?
Sensational.
Thanks, Cam. Sensational.
Well, I'm so glad you're doing well on this fine, gorgeous Wednesday day.
But you already, I hope you're having a great day, Cam.
You know, I don't know what you guys took out of that. The one thing that stood out to me was him talking about Nikhil Harry. You know, and you know, we always say, like, what I'm looking for. I'm waiting for him to wow me, right? And I'm just basing it off of talent. But, you know, you do forget that he missed, what, 9 games last year?
Yeah.
So he's technically, you know, he still experienced this NFL thing. Now, there's other wide receivers that maybe you look at, and but even the ones last year, if you go back and look, guys like, you know, DK Metcalf and some of the guys that jumped, you know, later in the year and say, oh, why isn't our rookie wide receiver doing it? Go look at their first six, seven, eight games too. You know what I mean? So, I don't know. Maybe I just when I heard him talking about it, I'm like, I'm probably not as patient as I should be with this kid.
Well, I would say that you're right on that, but and I would say that if you look at any of these receivers or running backs, they all had the same problems. They all had the same issues. They would fumble, they would miss an assignment. But if you pulled and then you know, I think everything with N'Keal is compounded because there's such a void at that position. So you're like, oh God, I hate to put all this pressure on you, but you're the only one we got. So you got to do everything. We don't have time for you to be a rookie anymore.
Okay, so I have no problem with the mental aspects of the game, and I think Lou brings up a legitimate point. And that is, it's going to take him a little bit more time. Here's what was the most disturbing to me on Sunday's game, and it wasn't even the fumble in the end zone. It was when he got hit on that first pass. This is physical ability, your strength. A little 5'9 cornerback is stopping you in a track like it was a brick wall. Is that because you were anticipating it? You were fearful of getting that in? You knew it was coming, so you hesitated? Or are you just not that strong?
That was weird because Lou brought this up to me the other day, and I was like, well, you know, he's getting ready to make a cut, and he wasn't. It's almost like he just slowed down. And I'm like, why are you slowing down? There's no place to go. I don't want to go out of bounds. Well, run through the guy. You're stronger than him. You have a head of steam. You should just make him pay and make sure next time he thinks about it because he's going to still feel the pain from the earlier play.
And we said this last year. He wasn't getting great separation, and he had to work on it with that foot doctor or whatever in the offseason.
Foot specialist.
Whatever he was. But part of the problem was he wasn't showing great strength. And that's the one thing we're looking at him in the body type and saying, you're strong as hell.
But you know what we want? You want game-saving catches. You want, you know, dynamic plays. And you want Julian Edelman-esque type stuff. You want Gronk-type plays. You want all these plays that, you know, the greats have. He's not there yet. Tom Brady's not here. I still think he has the ability to be a 1,000-yard receiver. I do. He should, and based on the need and how they threw it to him last week, he only threw the ball 19 times. And how many did he have? He had four or five of those? And he had one fumble. They're going to open it up. They're not going to have a choice. He may go in one game and have 10 catches, 200 yards, and then, I mean, and big breaking plays because. And that's what I'm waiting for.
See, I think that's going to be the most fascinating thing to watch over the next 3 weeks because I think we all agree they're going to have to open it up. These teams are going to put points up on the board. You know, this defense might even be really good. They're still not going to limit them to 11 points the next three quarterbacks. So you're going to see some open offense, and they're going to have to open it up. And see, we'll find out then whether they're able to and capable of doing it.
Yeah, he was talking about his relationships. You know, I've had an N'Keal and everywhere I've been, and he mentioned Kelvin Benjamin. That was all I thought. I was like, I don't think that relationship went so well.
Yeah,
it was because Kelvin Benjamin ended up getting traded to Buffalo, right?
I think it was
Buffalo, and then Carolina played Buffalo. And there was this whole little, not skirmish, but there was a confrontation. There was a discussion.
It was not a friendly discussion.
It was not. You could tell they didn't like each other. They had to be separated. And
did he try to steal his chain?
No. I don't think the chain was on at that point in time. But they're not friends. So, but maybe there's a different. Maybe because the age gap is a little bit bigger with N'Keal. And there's probably more respect from N'Keal toward. Yeah, there's a real legitimate big brother relationship where with Kelvin Benjamin, I don't think he was having it. I don't think he wanted to be told what to do. I mean, there was something there. They didn't like each other. And Christian McCaffrey was so young, and Cam got hurt, and he knew he was gone. So how strong was that relationship, really? So I don't know. I think it's the situation is perfect for him and N'Keal to have a legit big brother mentor situation. Now you just got and that's why I think that N'Keal has a better chance of thriving with Cam than he does Tom.
Oh, I agree with that.
Because I think Cam is going to force the issue. Hey, you need growth. I can help you. I got to trust you. And even when you let me down, I'm going to trust you again because I know our future is tied together.
But it also might get ugly at times. It might.
It will. With N'Keal, it will.
Yeah.
And I tell you what, Cam will take the blame because he knows, like, his psyche, how important, you know, his psyche is, the young player is. So he'll protect him. It's what he's doing already.
Well, we'll see. We'll see this weekend because, again, I don't think he's going to be able to throw the ball 19 times. He's going to have to open it up a little bit. Again, I think it was, 16 of the 32 starting quarterbacks threw the ball 35 times or more. 9 of them threw it over 40. So they're gonna have to get back to what the NFL is doing right now, I think, in this game, because I think Seattle puts up some points. And it's going to have to be N'Keal. Again, I'm still waiting to find out what Damir Bird's doing here. So I like to see him kind of
speed.
Do something.
They wanted to. Okay, they were great. Slow last year. The receiving core was slow.
Well,
they wanted to get a little quicker. We're going to find out a lot of things, I think, over the next 3 weeks because you're facing teams that just can put a lot of points up on the board. By the way, Tennessee announced today that they're going to put fans in the stands. Did you notice that? They're going to put fans in the stands.
I did. I still believe
it's not happening.
That they will do it.
It's not happening.
I do. I think.
Here?
No. Yes, I do.
We're not even increasing indoor dining. You know what we're doing in Massachusetts?
Eat outside.
We're doing outdoor dining.
Yeah, they've extended it.
Up until December the 1st.
Well, you know, that's perfect outdoor dining.
I think Baker should just extend it.
Who's going to eat outside in November?
Listen, give the people what they want. Extend outdoor seating permits till March. You know, because January, February, I think it's really going to help everybody out. Just keep
going to put the snow.
I love how they think they're doing us a favor. They're doing the restaurant owners a favor. Yeah. Hey, guys, I got the solution. Go ahead. Let your customers sit outside, you know, in November and December. You know, because it's not like it's freezing right now, Lou. Lou, I'm freezing my ass off this morning. Last night it gets dark earlier. I got to wear a coat.
Well, does the governor understand that when people dine, they're not going to be dining in the daytime when the sun is out, and even though it is 48 degrees, at least you've got some sun and you can wear a jacket. They're going to be dining at night when it's a lot colder than that, okay?
The people's governor.
Jeez. This is
giving people what they want.
Simple, and anybody thinks we're going to get fans down at Gillette, you're absolutely crazy. But I will say this, they probably are going to be the last team to do it. Because you're starting to see a lot of teams do it right now.
I will put I'll put a bet on that. What's your favorite? A bottle of wine. I'll give you.
You don't think they're going to be the last team?
You're sticking with California, huh?
They will have fans. Looks like the Pac-12 is going to play. I don't know. Everybody's starting to come around.
Are these virtual? Are these virtual fans? Or these cutouts?
No, real fans. Real people.
Human beings. I'm not sure I buy that. This hour has been brought to you by East Coast Metal Roofing. Don't go anywhere because we're here, as you know, until 6 p.m. We don't leave the studio until 6 p.m. It's coming up next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.